screens in the quiet night. Dots of color start. Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app.
We've got a really fascinating deep dive for you today.
Yeah, we really do. So I want you to imagine a seemingly harmless patch of cells in your throat. Structurally, they look like a flawless protective shield doing exactly what your body engineered them to do.
Right, just sitting there.
Exactly. But genetically, they are actually reading from a totally corrupted blueprint. They're silently carrying like a 50-fold increased risk of transforming into a deadly cancer.
Which is terrifying, honestly.
It really is. And it raises this massive mystery, you know. Why do some of these cellular patches just stay completely benign forever, while others rapidly transform into aggressive, uncontrollable tumors?
Yeah, and for decades, the specific mechanism driving that shift has just been hidden in the dark.
Right, but what if mapping the genetic instructions of millions of individual cells could finally reveal the sleeper agents driving this disease?
It completely changes the game. We're finally turning the lights on.
We really are. Today we celebrate the work of Martin C. Wenzel, Pierre Dasme, Johannes Schumacher, Axel M. Hilmer, and their diverse teams spanning the University of Cologne and the University of Marburg, who have advanced our understanding of how specific cell types confer risk for esophageal cancer via genetic predisposition.
Yeah, their work directly addresses a clinical reality that has, frankly, frustrated oncologists for a very long time.
Totally. So let's set the stage a bit. What exactly is the biological battlefield we're looking at here?
Right. So the battlefield is the lower esophagus, right at the junction where it meets the stomach.
Right.
And for people suffering from chronic acid reflux, so gastroesophageal reflux disease, or GERD, this delicate tissue is just under constant assault from stomach acid.
Because the normal lining of the esophagus isn't built for that, right?
Exactly. The normal lining is made of squamous cells. They're layered like flat floorboards, perfectly designed for food to slide down smoothly. But they have almost no defense against hydrochloric acid.
So the body kind of panics and tries to remodel.
Yeah, exactly. As a survival mechanism, the body fundamentally alters its own architecture. It replaces those vulnerable squamous cells with columnar cells.
And those are different how?
Well, they're tall, sturdy structures, similar to the ones lining the intestines. They are heavily equipped to withstand acid. And this architectural shift is what we diagnose as Barrett's esophagus.
Okay, so is Barrett's esophagus essentially the body putting up a fireproof wall to stop acid damage, but accidentally building that wall out of asbestos?
That is a perfect analogy, actually, yes. The wall survives the immediate fire, but the bricks themselves harbor a dormant, inherited risk that eventually causes a much deadlier catastrophe.
Oh, wow.
Because we have known from large population studies that Barrett's esophagus dramatically increases your risk of developing esophageal adenocarcinoma.
Which is a highly aggressive cancer, right?
Very aggressive. It has a really grim 5-year survival rate. The clinical headache here is that we know inherited genetic factors dictate whose Barrett's tissue will turn malignant.
But we didn't know which cells were responsible.
Exactly. Until this study, nobody could point to the specific cells within that tissue that were actually utilizing those dangerous genetic instructions.
Because traditionally, if doctors take a biopsy of that wall and, you know, grind it up for a bulk genetic test, you just get a blended smoothie.
Right, a smoothie of healthy cells, immune cells, maybe a few toxic bricks.
Yeah, you know the asbestos is in there somewhere, but you have no idea which specific cells are the bad actors.
And that blended smoothie approach is exactly why the mechanism remained a mystery for so long.
It just averages everything out.
Exactly. Bulk tissue sequencing averages out the genetic signals. It drowns the whispers of the malignant sleeper agents in the loud noise of the healthy surrounding tissue.
So because that bulk tissue analysis couldn't identify the specific asbestos cells, the researchers had to zoom in to an unprecedented level, right?
Yeah, they had to separate every single brick in that wall and read its individual manufacturing blueprint.
How did they even get the tissue for that?
They took biopsies from 9 male patients. 5 had Barrett's esophagus, and 4 had already developed esophageal adenocarcinoma.
But the brilliance of their study design is the built-in control environment. They didn't just harvest the disease tissue.
No, they didn't. That's the key. From those exact same 9 patients, they also biopsied healthy normal esophagus and healthy stomach tissue from the gastric fundus.
Which is huge.
Huge. They established a personalized baseline genetic environment for every single subject before comparing it to the disease states.
Right. So once they had those biopsies, how did they actually map the tissue cell by cell?
They used a really cool platform from 10x Genomics to perform single cell RNA sequencing.
Okay, so break that down for us, because they aren't just tossing the tissue into a blender anymore.
Right, no blenders. They took the fresh biopsies and chemically dissociated the tissue, breaking it down until the individual cells were just freely floating in a liquid suspension.
So imagine a microscopic high-speed assembly line.
Yeah. They feed this cell suspension into a microfluidic device, and it isolates every single cell and encapsulates it inside its own tiny gel droplet.
Suspended in oil, right?
Exactly. And inside that microscopic droplet, the cell is chemically broken open or elised, and all of its RNA is released.
And RNA is the crucial part here.
It is. We aren't just looking at the static DNA in the nucleus. RNA represents the active instructions the cell is currently reading and executing.
Right. It tells you what the cell's actually doing in that exact moment.
Exactly. So inside that droplet, every single piece of RNA gets tagged with a unique molecular identifier, basically a microscopic barcode.
Okay, that makes sense. So once the barcodes are attached, the researchers can sequence the entire massive batch of millions of RNA strands together.
Yeah, and then they use computers to sort every single active instruction back to the exact individual cell that produced it.
That is just mind-blowing.
It really is.
But, you know, just having a cellular inventory isn't enough to find those asbestos bricks. The real genius of the study is how they merged this single-cell map with massive genome-wide association study data.
Yes, the GWAS data. So genome-wide association studies give us population-level statistical data.
Right, by scanning the genomes of tens of thousands of people.
Exactly. So we have these vast databases of genetic typos, single nucleotide polymorphisms, or SNPs, that are highly associated with an increased risk of getting esophageal cancer.
So how do you combine those two massive data sets?
They used a sophisticated statistical tool called linkage disequilibrium score regression, or LDSR.
Okay, LDSR. In simple terms for the listener, it's essentially like overlaying two transparent maps on top of each other, right?
That's exactly it. Map A is the single cell data showing us exactly which genes every specific cell type relies on most to function.
Right.
And map B is the GWAS database showing us exactly where the dangerous cancer risk typos are located on the human genome.
So the LDSR tests whether those known genetic typos are heavily concentrated in the specific genes that certain cell types rely on.
Exactly. It mathematically forces the data to answer a simple question. Which specific cell population is actively expressing the genes that carry the inherited risk for cancer?
And we have to mention the negative controls here because it's such a fascinating detail.
Oh, yeah. To prove their mathematical model wasn't just finding random noise, they mapped genetic risk variants for major depressive disorder and lung cancer over their esophageal cells.
Wait, really? Depression and lung cancer?
Yep. And the math held up perfectly. They found absolutely zero genetic enrichment for depression or lung cancer in the cells of the esophagus.
Which confirms the model is only finding biological signals strictly relevant to esophageal biology.
Exactly. So when they finally overlaid the esophageal genetic risk map onto the single cell map, the results were incredible.
So which cells lit up?
Well, they discovered this stark divergence between how Barrett's esophagus forms versus how the actual cancer takes over. It turns out, Barrett's esophagus is driven more by systemic issues.
Meaning like broad anatomical factors.
Yeah, exactly. Things like the mechanics of reflux, the structural integrity of your lower esophageal sphincter, or a genetic predisposition to hiatal hernias.
So Barrett's development is essentially driven by the body's mechanical failure to keep the acid in the stomach.
Right. But the transition into esophageal adenocarcinoma, the cancer, is an entirely different story. That leap is heavily driven by local cellular processes.
Really? How local?
Very local. The analysis isolated 10 specific cell types within the tissue itself that showed immense genetic enrichment for the cancer risk.
Wow.
Yeah, so the danger morphs from this systemic mechanical issue into a deeply localized cellular betrayal. And sitting right at the center of that betrayal is the cell type they identified as the ultimate sleeper agent.
The intestinal metaplasia cell.
Exactly, the intestinal metaplasia cell.
And they found this specific cell type abundantly in both the benign Barrett's tissue and the malignant tumor tissue, right?
Yeah, they did. But here is the paradox. When you look at the genome of these intestinal metaplasia cells, they actually look relatively stable.
Wait, stable? How?
Well, they lack massive somatic copy number alterations, or SCNAs.
Okay, so they don't have massive chromosomal chaos.
Right, which is why these cells fly under the radar of traditional pathology. In a full-blown malignancy, the genome just shatters. You see entire chunks of chromosomes duplicated or deleted.
But these intestinal metaplasia cells still have relatively intact chromosomes, meaning they look genetically benign.
Genetically benign, yes. They haven't crossed the threshold into full-blown cancer, but their biological engine is just redlining.
How so?
The single-cell data showed they have extraordinarily high oxidative phosphorylation.
Meaning they have a really high metabolic turnover.
Exactly. They are burning energy at a rate usually reserved for aggressive tumors. Furthermore, they're heavily expressing an intestinal stem cell marker called OLFM4.
Which acts as a robust biological do-not-die signal.
Right. It's typically used by stem cells to maintain their immortal state. And they also pump out a marker called REG4.
Which is a secretory protein normally used to accelerate tissue repair after damage.
Exactly. And the real aha moment of the LDSR overlay is that these specific non-malignant intestinal metaplasia cells showed the absolute strongest enrichment for the esophageal cancer genetic risk variants.
They are the pivotal cell type on the trajectory from benign to cancer, the asbestos bricks.
Yes. They sit squarely at the developmental crossroads, accumulating energy and survival signals, just waiting for the final spark.
That is wild. And it really changes how we view the tumors themselves, right? Because cancer isn't just a monolith.
Oh, totally. The single cell resolution proved that the resulting cancer is incredibly chaotic and highly fractionated.
Yeah, detail that for us. Because if these specific cells are the ignition point, you'd assume the resulting fire looks uniform.
You would assume that, yeah. But mapping the cells individually showed distinct tumor clusters with entirely different operational agendas. They identified one specific tumor cluster they labeled EACO2.
Okay, what was EACO2 doing?
It was highly proliferative, rapidly dividing by expressing a gene called WNT11, which basically hijacks the cell cycle machinery.
Wow.
It also had obvious genetic chaos copy gains on chromosomes 6p, 8q, and 9q. And crucially, this specific EACO2 cluster was absolutely packed with the inherited genetic risk variants.
But then you look at a different cluster labeled EACO1, extracted from the exact same patients.
Right, and EACO1 wasn't prioritizing rapid division. Instead, it heavily expressed MMT7.
Which is a matrix metalloproteinase, basically molecular scissors that chew through the tissue boundaries so the tumor can invade.
Exactly, and remarkably, that invasive EACO1 cluster showed almost no significant enrichment for the original inherited genetic risk variants.
That illustrates so perfectly how a single tumor emerges from entirely different foundational components.
It really does. But the data reveals one final twist. It wasn't just the epithelial cells lining the throat that lit up on the genetic risk map.
Right. The neighborhood matters.
Right.
The microenvironment is completely complicit.
Completely. The analysis showed that specific fibroblasts, specifically esophageal fibroblasts too, and vital immune cells like memory CD4 plus T cells and plasmacytoid dendritic cells also possessed profound enrichment for the genetic risk.
Wait. So you're telling me a person's inherited cancer risk is partly being driven by their immune cells and structural fibroblasts failing to keep the neighborhood safe?
I am. It highlights how germline risks manipulate the whole microenvironment.
That is incredible. The security guards and the building managers are in on it.
The entire ecosystem is rigged from the start.
Knowing the identity of these sleeper agents has to completely change how we might handle a patient going in for a routine endoscopy.
It does. Translating this into clinical practice is huge. Right now, a patient with Barrett's esophagus just endures routine endoscopies every few years, waiting to see if visual changes happen.
Right, it relies entirely on spotting the fire after it starts.
But imagine the future application. If doctors can test Barrett's biopsy specifically for the presence of these differentiated columnar cells, looking for those markers we mentioned, like REG4, CDH17, or OLFM4, they could predict exactly which patients are going to progress to cancer.
Because they're looking directly at the molecular engine. If those markers are absent, the patient's tissue is truly just protective armor.
Exactly. This saves lives and spares low-risk patients from decades of anxiety and invasive scoping.
But I have to ask, what is the catch here? What are the limitations of this study?
Well, due to the intense technical difficulty of capturing live single cells from fresh biopsies, the sample size was small. It was only 9 patients.
Right. And they were all males of European descent, right?
Yes. So validating these specific sleeper agent markers requires much larger, highly diverse global cohorts.
That makes sense. And what about next steps for the research itself?
Future research requires functional lab experiments. Researchers need to see exactly how these genetic variants alter the behavior of the intestinal metaplasia cells.
So using things like CRISPR to intentionally manipulate these specific genetic risk loci in a petri dish.
Exactly. We need to watch the asbestos actually catch fire in a controlled environment to prove the mechanical causality.
Wow. So to sum this all up, the transition from Barrett's esophagus to deadly adenocarcinoma is not just random bad luck.
Not at all.
It is heavily orchestrated by inherited genetic risks acting through highly specific non-malignant sleeper cells.
Right. By pinpointing the intestinal metaplasia cells in their microenvironment, science is finally illuminating the exact cellular path to cancer.
It's just phenomenal work, which leaves us with a profound question for you to ponder today. What does this mean for the future of personalized cancer screening?
It's a huge question.
It really is. This episode is based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base. Under bright screens in the quiet night, dots of color start to organize. One cell whispers, one cell shouts, new names rising from the noise. We draw the map with a steady hand, watch the borders shift like sand. From calm to coded, line by line, the warning sign begins to shine. Raise the horns, let the brass testify. From Barrett's shadow to a sharper light, clusters bloom. The tissue takes. Gastric like dreams in a borrowed place. Intestinal scripts on an altered stage. TFF1 and MUNU5X and KRT17 cuts a brighter edge. And deeper down the numbers turn. Copy gains, copy losses, lessons learned. Stroma shifting, immune rearranged, a crowd of